It also happens as a progression. It's growth. As you grow spiritually, you act differently.
Yeah, and it doesn't happen overnight.
It sure doesn't. Yeah. We wish it could.
Yes.
The idea is there, but then I had to look at myself too one day through bibliotherapy and say, what am I doing? What am I doing that attracts certain people into my life? And how can I make the adjustment where they'll just keep going and not see me as someone to latch on to?
Hello, and welcome to all of you beautiful souls. Thank you for tuning in today to the Heart of the Soul podcast. This is a space where we explore what it means to be wild women walking upon this earth, connecting about that which unites us all. Together, we will unearth that which is often unseen and unspoken through the ancient ritual of storytelling. I invite you to sync to the cycles of our moon with me, enjoying new episodes on full and new moons. It is my hope that soaking in these stories will bring you closer to your own innate knowing and center you into a more embodied, alive version of your beautiful, unique self. Today is Monday, December 18th, 2023. The moon is currently waxing or building toward the next full moon on December 26th. We're just a few days away now from December 21st, which in the Northern Hemisphere is winter solstice and the darkest day of the year. On this day, I enjoy celebrating with family and community with candle making and outdoor fires. Today, I have the honor of communing with Carolyn Jones through the cosmos here on Zoom. A dear sister friend of ours, Colleen, connected us, and as soon as I saw your Be Healed website and that you're a bereavement chaplain, an herbalist, an author, among many other talents, I could completely understand why Colleen was excited for us to meet in this way. Carolyn and I got to have a short conversation via phone a while back, and it was obvious we could talk for a long time. So, Carolyn, I'm delighted and excited to be spending this time with you today. And I would love for you to take some time to introduce yourself in whatever way feels good to you.
Thank you so much, Imana. Thank you for having me and sending a shout out and thanks to my spiritual daughter, Colleen, for connecting us in such a way. I met Colleen at a dream workshop, and we've been connected at the spirit ever since. And so I am, yes, a bereavement chaplain, and I am a holistic health practitioner that operates through aromatherapy, flower essences, reflexology, and more recently, acupuncture detoxification, which is under the NADA system for harm reduction. And I love doing community work with senior centers and libraries and just being in touch with my neighbors, my global neighbors and my local neighbors, in order to further learn about how people try to heal, how people are healing, and how they want to heal and what they want to heal from.
Yes. And where in the world are you located?
I'm in Brooklyn, New York.
Wow. Yes.
Yes.
How long have you been in Brooklyn, or where were you born and raised? What brought you to New York? If that's not where I was started.
I was born in Harlem. And my mother moved to Brooklyn upon getting married. And I've lived in Brooklyn, save for about 3 years where I lived in Jersey for a while. But yeah, Brooklyn, I would say, is my home.
Beautiful.
Yes.
And right now, what's the weather like outside today?
It's a little gloomy, a little wet, rainy. It begs for some writing indoors and drinking tea. and being on podcasts.
Excellent, excellent.
Yes.
So I would love to hear more about your bereavement chaplain work and what brought you to that, and how did you get involved with that? It's something, a term that I hadn't heard, I think, before your website, but it totally makes sense that there would be a specific, you know, person that would.
Well, I love that you asked me how I got into it. I initially became a chaplain while I was working at a senior center in Brooklyn. The director was a chaplain, and you know, she shared that with me. I said, wow, I always wanted to be a chaplain. I never knew how. And she showed me an organization called the New York State Chaplain Task Force.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through the course and the ceremony and such, and became a licensed chaplain. And I was doing, you may as well say, chaplain work already. But then I got the opportunity to work at a funeral home here in Brooklyn. And I served as an aftercare counselor. And that made me know that I wanted to be very specific about my chaplain work, because I brought that work into the funeral home, that mindset into the funeral home.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't just about talk therapy. Being an herbalist, I brought in herbs that could soothe the people. I would offer them tea, and we might journal, or we might do art therapy and things like that. So I was very non-traditional. I created my own way of being a bereavement chaplain,
mm-hmm.
and saw that it worked, and it really put people on the right path to accepting their losses.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the losses extended past the death. You know, they would begin to tell me the inner stories, you know, family upsets, or maybe even health challenges and stuff like that. So it became a very deep involvement as a chaplain and also as a holistic health practitioner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, our stories are so layered, and there can be, like you said, this sort of unraveling that happens across time, not just at, you know, one moment, that we can uncover these other parts of a story that relate to what we're experiencing in that moment.
Yes, and grief tends to rip the layers apart, you know,
unfold
mm-hmm. very quickly. Whereas when we're satisfied or content, we tend not to pay so much attention to that part of living.
Mm-hmm.
That is a part of living.
Yeah, that can be that, like, yeah, like you said, the growth that is almost forced upon us sometimes in grief. I know that I've experienced that myself with different deaths and just endings of things and having grief come up. Would you be willing to share us a story of a time in your life when you experienced grief, and some maybe things that helped you to move through that time? Or
yes, I have experienced quite a few losses in my life, but the one that stands out to this day is when my baby died in the bed next to me, at Janelle. And she had a twin, and I happened to be in the bed with her aunt, who, God rest her soul, she is now with the spirits, the ancestral spirits. And I woke up, Colette is her twin, to Colette whining. And so I figure, okay, it's time to feed both of them. And Robin was helping me, their aunt was helping me. So she was gonna feed Colette, and I was gonna feed Janelle. And Janelle wasn't moving. And so, you know, I picked her up, and I remember saying, she's stiff as a board. And when I looked at her face, the blood had settled on one side. One side of her face was darkened and flat, and the other side was like normal. And in that moment, you know, I screamed that she's dead. And I leaped out of bed. And all I remember is running out of the room. And I just could hear my own scream. And I was skipping stairs. It's a wonder I didn't break my neck, because I don't remember hitting more than three stairs. And it was a long staircase. And then I had to ride in the police car when they came to take the baby to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And I remember whimpering as I was getting in the car and he was handing the baby to me. And he said, you know, I understand. I know, I know. And the last two images I have of her was in the autopsy room looking through the window, and then at the funeral home when I stroked her hair. But I don't, and we, of course, I remember us going to the cemetery, but I don't have a recall of much else. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I say that is the experience that stands out for me, and it was changing my life so that I could do this kind of work today. Of course, I didn't know it then, but it changed my perspective on death. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was your perspective before to after? Like, how did that shift?
Well, I think I was just in a whirl of life. You know, death didn't exist for me. I mm-hmm. was 20, mm-hmm. you know. And so the work was an inner work. I think, though, it made me more intentional about enjoying my life. Mm-hmm. Maybe I over-enjoyed it, you know, to compensate for the grief. But the initial reaction, I couldn't even change her sister's diaper. My mother had to do it. I would go out and gaze at the clouds. Mm-hmm. I would say the clouds helped me heal. And as I look back now, dancing, going to the club and formal classes helped mm-hmm. me heal.
Yes.
Yes, because, you know, you could just be in the dance spirit. So you didn't mm-hmm. have to deal with your human reality per se, you know? And then over time, of course, my writing helped, and just being involved with community events and people. Mm-hmm. But I can look back now and say that that was part of my healing. When I was studying to be a holistic health practitioner, I could choose my courses. Mm-hmm. And one of the courses I chose was death and dying. And it wasn't until I took that course, which was 2009, so that was so many years later, mm-hmm. that I realized that what I had experienced was grief. I didn't know that how I was behaving before then was a part of my grief experience. Mm-hmm. And so I would say studying to be a holistic health practitioner put the icing on the cake of my healing, because then I immersed myself in different forms of the modalities and offerings for healing oneself. And it mm-hmm. was a total immersion into looking inside of me.
Yes.
And that is what brought me to being able to share it. with others because I know it works. Because it works.
Yes. And you've walked the path.
Right. And every healing modality doesn't work on every person. But one of my beefs with Western medicine is the cookie cutter approach to what I love about Eastern medicine is it makes you connect with nature and what you're eating, like Ayurvedic. It focuses on the digestive system. Eastern with acupuncture and acupressure, it focuses on energy points and things. So it's all internal. So it's sort of backwards. Really, I feel, my opinion, Eastern medicine should be put out front with Western medicine as an option.
Yes.
Cut last, but first see what caused the illness. So if it's mental, what happened to you? And that's what I love about be love. You know, start with developing the love seed in a person for themselves so that they can begin to accept and love whatever comes their way.
Yes. Yeah, it's so interesting to hear you. It makes sense that like grief maybe wasn't even a concept that was much spoken about. I feel like even in the last, you know, decade or so that I've been working within the grief realm and palliative care and things of that nature, that grief has become, there's been more of an awareness of grief. And so I imagine that many years ago that it would be even less, you know, unspoken and like just misunderstood or not understood. And I love that you spoke to dance and movement being a part of your healing, because that has absolutely been a part of my healing as well. And something that I work with women in grief, because there's times where, words, we can't necessarily like speak the emotion or feeling, but there's something about being able to like move and expressing it in a different way other than words.
That's right. And it shifts the energy.
Yes.
I had an acupuncture experience a couple of weeks ago at the clinic where I volunteer. And the beautiful student of Pacific College of Health and Sciences, they do their externships at On Point Clinic in Harlem. And throughout my life, my shoulders have always seemed to, I couldn't seem to keep my shoulders down. They always seemed to be like they were hugging me. And you know, I've people have mentioned it and I push it down, you know, all that, and they shoot back up, right? So I could get treatment because I work in the clinic, and it was the day for full body acupuncture. And I actually zeroed in on all of the externs there, and my spirit chose Kelly. When she lay, I laid down on my stomach, and she said to me, "Can I prick you a little bit? Like, just draw a little bit of blood. I just want to," she says, "not, you know." And I had already had a discussion with acupuncturists, the group, the day before, or listened in, where they use bleeding as a technique, not like in the medieval times, okay? No buckets of blood. But so I agreed. And it was just a little prick, you know, like a little, like if you stick yourself with a needle, a sewing needle or something. And so she expressed the wound a little bit, so it bleed a little bit on each side. There was barely a scab when it was all over as it healed. And I asked her, "What and why do you do it?" Because I had never heard of bleeding in the acupuncture modality of healing. And she said that it releases energy, right? It releases energy. And believe it or not, I mean, my shoulders went down and have been down ever since.
Oh, wow.
But I said to her, what's the spiritual reason? Because I know in Chinese medicine, they operate on all of those levels, physical and spiritual. She said, because our emotions get trapped in our blood. And it was such an epiphany to me as to why a person can go to counseling for years and years and years, and it doesn't work.
The it's way in the body.
Expected to, it's trapped in their body.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a certain mindset, I think, for a person to open themselves up to that, because I mean, I grew up fearful of needles. So I'm amazed that I can even do acupuncture on someone today, even for the 5 points. But Juan Cortez was my instructor, and he made me have a mind shift. He said, you said what was wrong, what your obstacle was when you came in here. And I said, what? He said, think, you said it. I said, I don't want to hurt anybody. He said, right. He says, so when you're putting in the needle, think of it as you're injecting them with love. So every time you get ready to put the needle in the point, love. So now you're doing that 5 times, love on one side, and then 5 times on the other, love. And that actually helped me move into the practice successfully.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So I would like, as because I'm also an educator, and as I go out, I try to break down the mental barriers that keep people from trying something new. Because if you're taking a medication for however many years, it might not be working. And especially if it's causing all these other side effects and causing even more illness.
Yeah, absolutely. Those things need to be reevaluated.
And even with the approach to death, I think it's important to look at how other cultures view death in order to change your own mindset. When I was working in the funeral home, I got a call from a woman who couldn't make it to her mother's funeral. And it was during the pandemic too. But more than that, it was personal reasons that she couldn't make it. I don't know whether it was financial or what, but be that as it may, she was under a lot of stress and guilt. And so I shared with her the Tibetan perception of dying, how it works with the elements. And in witnessing people as they're dying, which I've had the privilege of a few times, you see the steps that the Tibetans lay out, like the wind, the hard breathing, you know, the death rattle, they call it. You know? So they attribute that to the wind, and how the person, excretory system weakens, and they'll either urinate or defecate, and they attribute it to the water, you know, so it's just so many ways that death can be viewed that takes the sting of it away and brings a deeper understanding. As long as we're going to do it anyway, we may as well understand it.
Yeah, no one escapes death.
Yeah.
And Mother Nature shows us, in so many different ways that that's just part of the, birth, death, rebirth life cycle. When the leaves fall from the trees each autumn and return to the earth, and then that energy comes back in the new leaves in the springtime and flowers. Yeah.
True.
I know that some of your work contains helping people to what's the right what is the word I want to use here? Maybe embody or recognize their own self-worth, and also maybe toxic relationships that are no longer working for them, and ways for them to remove themselves from those relationships. Could you tell me more about that? And if there's a story that might go along, that would be wonderful too.
Well, I'll start with the story first. After having taken a very unceremonious departure from an abusive relationship, I would just offer that anyone experiencing that and overthinking what they should do just needs to make a plan. You may or may not have time to make that plan, but keep your mind clear so that you can make decisions and communicate with spirit in a way that the answers that you need will come to you fast enough for you to save your own life, be it short in the short term or in the long term. A lot of times people stay in relationships because they're afraid of failure, really, financial failure, not being able to get another relationship. We still hearing, which I think is so outdated, for the kids, you cannot take care of the children properly if you are struggling in the mire of resentment, hatred, fear, guilt, all of these things. You have to clear your spirit so that the children can live the life they deserve because they're the sponges.
Yes, they are.
Right.
You spoke to speaking to spirit as part of this. And so for you and I think we have our own practices of speaking to spirit for but if there might be a listener that's like, "Ooh, I've never tried to speak to spirit," or like, "What, how would you invite someone into that dialogue with spirit?"
Well, speaking to spirit requires quiet. So if you can find based on where you live, a botanic garden or a safe foresty area, or look, find a church that I was brought up Baptist, but I'll go in any church. And what I'd love to do is go in, and I worship in an interdenominational way now. So it's not just one thing. I'll go into a Catholic church and just sit and light the candles and do the ritual as I understand it, not as a Catholic, but lighting candles is sort of universal. It's a universal act. And prayer is just the expression of the desires of your heart. And it doesn't require you getting on your knees. It doesn't require you being in any special place. You could pray all day long. There's something that I read, one of these silly memes. It said, if you see me talking to myself, don't bother me. I'm having a staff meeting. So that's the thing. Have staff meetings with yourself and say, this is working for me. This isn't working for me. I'm not putting up with this anymore. How am I going to solve it? And another thing that people don't do as much of as they should, if any, is read. Bibliotherapy helped me save my life. Because at the time that I was coming into my own for understanding self-love, and, you know, Oprah helped along with that. That's, you know, she brought it out into the open, was reading self-help books and really coming to terms. I have a story.
Yeah, love to hear it.
Okay. So when I first entered college, I left, I didn't know it until years later, 4 credits before graduation. In love, didn't want to take Western Civ. Those are good reasons, right? Can't you just feel the wisdom in that? And so in between there, I gave birth to my twins and had a tumultuous life. Came back to New York, had a tumultuous life in Jersey, came back to New York, and eventually found an apartment. And I was reading, I have an extensive library. I have a self-help and holistic health library and a Black history library. And I had chosen from my self-help library. And the passage, I don't remember what book it was at this time, but it said something that made me break down and cry. I had these this dining room set, you know, the little ice cream parlor sets with the cute little chairs. I had that, and I was sitting in the chair at the table. And the passage said, whatever has happened to you in your life, in order to move forward, you must accept that you had a part in it. I wailed like a baby when I sat there and looked at all the ways that I had contributed to my own situation that was really untenable. I was on unemployment, getting in some work whenever I could as a temp, because I did have skills. But I wanted to be a writer, like a successful writer. And then the voice said to me, because don't forget, I'm in this quiet time. The voice said to me, the reason that you are not succeeding in what you do is because you've not finished anything. So the next day I had to sign for my unemployment check. I was attending Marble Collegiate Church at the time under the leadership of Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, to whom I'll be forever grateful. I just love him. I used to see him coming through the church when he's getting ready to leave. I said, give me a kiss, Norman. And he'd stick his cheek out and I'd kiss him, you know. And what was so significant about that was my mother used to listen to him on the radio when I was a little girl.
Wow.
And I met this guy that told me he was a member of the church. I said, oh, I want to go to that church. And I went, and the way he taught, not preached, taught, resonated with me. Because he would interject the Bible into positive thinking concepts and through stories, just like you're doing, you know, stories are so important. So I resolved, and this is what I mean by making a plan. I resolved that when I got up the next morning, I would dress for success. I always tried to look nice when I went out, but I wanted it to be a little extra. So I put on my, it's a beautiful dress that I wish I still had, like a beautiful yellow and like a beige suit jacket. And I don't remember what color shoes, but anyway, they did their job. And I went to sign for unemployment, and I went to City Tech to sign back up for college. Because I had already gotten the paperwork that told me I had lost 8 credits So I had to resolve to take 12 credits when I went back. And I said, I don't know how I'm going to get the money to go to school, but I'm going to go back to school. So I got the application, filled it out in admissions. And when I was leaving, this very handsome, and I believe his name was John, but it really doesn't matter what his name was, because he is an angel in my life. Blonde, blue-eyed, like sharp blue eyes, was sitting at a desk. And I said, could you tell me how I could like get a job, like work? I didn't know to say work study. And it's a good thing I didn't. So he said, you want a job? I said, yeah. He said, okay, hold on a minute. And he wrote on a piece of paper. He said, now when you leave, I want you to go to the Pearl Building. Do you know where that is? I said, no. He said, I'll walk you out to the parking lot. So he walked me out and he pointed me to a building. I went there. And of course, I peeked at the piece of paper when I was going up the stairs. And it said, Michelle, please give Miss Jones a typing test, because he had asked me if I could type. And because I had been doing the temp jobs, I had kept up my skills. So she read it, sat me down at a typewriter, told me, you know, I had to make 50 words a minute. Somewhere in there, my fingers started freezing up. And I started saying the 23rd Psalm. As I said the Psalm, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. My fingers started loosening up and they started flying. I don't know whether I was making mistakes or not. I just kept going. When the test was over, I had made 5 above what was required, 5 words a minute over what was required. Yes. And she saw it and said, if you're willing to wait 4 weeks, you have a job. From that, I ended up with a civil service job. All of my degrees were earned for free, all the way up to the master's. And is how I ended up studying media. And then from that degree, it wasn't for naught, because by the time I went for my master's, I knew I was going to teach. And I would work as a secretary from 1994 till when I retired in 2006. Work as a secretary during the day and be an adjunct lecturer at night. So that's the power of bibliotherapy and the quiet time. It gave me a whole life.
Yes. And how did you learn your own self-worth?
I believe that it was, I'm a Scorpio, so it sort of was in me. And I watched my mother be abused by my stepfather, not physically, psychologically and emotionally. And I was so angry with her because, like, how are you letting this? Like, one day she asked him, she was the one working. He was on workers' comp after the first year they got married. And she asked him if she could buy some orange juice. Right. You see that look on your face? I think it echoes the look that was on my face, like, you've got to be kidding me. Okay. And I remember saying to her, Ma, why are you asking him if you could buy some orange juice, you know, like that? But, you know, being a Southern Belle from Georgia and valuing that idea of marriage and having had me out of wedlock and all of that, there was this thing that she attached to being married that had consumed her to a point that to this day, I don't understand that way. I honor those who want to be married and I honor the institution of marriage. but I don't honor it to the point where you have to self-destruct. So I would say that not wanting to live the way I saw my mother living was help was what helped me climb up, even though it did affect me and how I saw my relationships too. And I had to climb out of that. But I think it gave me the first level of courage to know that if I'm being treated in a way that won't work, I won't stay for the duration.
Yes.
I might overstay a little bit, but today I won't, overstay at all. I won't stay. So it also happens as a progression. It's growth. As you grow spiritually, you act differently.
Yeah, and it doesn't happen overnight.
It sure doesn't. Yeah. We wish it could.
Yes.
The idea is there, but then I had to look at myself too one day through bibliotherapy and say, what am I doing? What am I doing that attracts certain people into my life? And how can I make the adjustment where they'll just keep going and not see me as someone to latch on to?
Yeah. I mean, I really appreciate you bringing that point of view into the situation, like you said, of sitting at the table, and you had that quote that just made you reflect on your part in your own life, that we are co-creators in our life. We have this metaphorical paintbrush and we participate in our life.
I like that metaphorical paintbrush. True.
Yes. You wrote a book called Pick Up Your Bed and Walk, a self-care guide to improved health and incantations.
Yes.
I would love to hear more about this book and what inspired you to write it. And yeah, anything else you might want to share about it.
All right. You want to put me on pause and I'll go get the book?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, Pick Up Your Bed and Walk, a self-care guide to improve health, was inspired by the senior citizens I was teaching, because I would teach a class about a particular herb, like it would be the herb of the day. I would go there on Mondays, and they would invariably ask me the next week, what's that herb that you were talking about? So I said, let me just create a book. And what it is for someone who wants to become familiar with different herbs. And I incorporated oils and flower essences, you know, at least definitions and a glossary in there too. And listed other healing modalities like color therapy, sound therapy, just so people could know that, you know, it wasn't just herbs that they could tap into. But it's set up from A to Z, and I might choose, depending on what I could find, two or three herbs for A and list their healing properties and stuff. And then at the bottom, I would put a statement that they could reflect on. So for H, I covered hawthorn, hibiscus, honey, honeysuckle, hydrangea, and homeopathy, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yes. And I put harmony is freedom from oppressive behaviors, thoughts, and people. So each statement at the bottom of the page starts with the letter that I'm highlighting on that page. And, you know, I gave instructions on how to make medicinal strength tea and put some of my poetry in there, of course, and just gave the reader also an opportunity to journal. And, okay, for instance, food for thought. Who am I? Why am I here? Where am I going? How can I serve humanity? A lot of times people get caught up so much in what's going on with them that they forget that they have an obligation to serve humanity at some point along the way. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love the way that you categorize that and all the ways you brought in just with that H and sharing what was there. Would you hold up the book for people who might be watching on YouTube so that they can see?
Oh, absolutely. Pick up your bed and walk.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wait. Can you see it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yes.
What are your favorite ways? I know, I mean, you've worked and served and helped people across decades. Right now, at this phase in your living, what are maybe your favorite two ways that you serve clients and people that you work with?
Well, the way that I'm most excited about these days is the work that I'm doing with On Point that I mentioned before, mm-hmm. where I help de-stress people who are trying to overcome substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And Juan Cortez, who I mentioned before, has created a beautiful sanctuary upstairs. Downstairs, there's the overdose prevention clinic. But upstairs is like a sanctuary where they do sound therapy, of course, the acupuncture, 5-point NADA treatment. And I've also brought in my aromatherapy and reflexology to the space. So what I love about it, I'm able to self-actualize fully there.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I love doing is going to different communities and teaching kitchen medicine or whatever other topic they might want to learn. Like I have an upcoming series at a community library, Cotelia Library in Brooklyn in January and February that will cover kitchen medicine, skin care, natural skin care, flower essences, and something I call a soundscape. We'll be exploring different shamanic instruments. So, yeah. So the way I studied makes me very happy because I'm able to not just concentrate on one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those offerings are for people that are in the flesh and can meet you in that way in New York. And do you have any offerings that are virtual for people that might be wanting to connect with you and your healing modalities through this type of connection?
Yes. I've developed curriculum for all of the topics I've named. And I also will do counseling by Zoom. I have done bereavement counseling by Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And a person could actually make a request for a particular modality that they might be interested in that I am skilled in. And mm-hmm. I'll customize a curriculum for them. Because, you know, for herbology, you can go many different ways. Plant talk takes many different avenues. So I can customize that curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. What other things do you feel people might not know about you or that you'd like people to know about you?
Well, I think I've shared quite a bit, but what I would love to do is read one of my poems.
Oh, I would love that.
Yes, from Pick Up Your Bed and Walk.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Rock Solid. So sensitive the soul, more precious the gold, languishing, longing, perfect and pure. Seeking the light, it feels so unsure, but trust in yourself. The answer is you. Project your thoughts inward. You know what to do. Make a clear choice. You're on the right track. Head for your dreams with the wind at your back. Ride the wave of the breath, long, deep, and strong. Your core is rock solid. What's right can't be wrong.
Oh, yes. There's so much wisdom just in that. I feel like, especially in today's times, it's so common for us to be looking outside of ourselves for answers. And I love that your poem is such a beautiful reminder to turn inward and remember that the answers are there and that we are strong and that we know.
True. Yeah, the answer is in us.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share before we close?
Nothing more than I love you for connecting with me and sharing me with your audience, and I look forward to a continued relationship. And if anyone wants to reach me, they can reach me through www.behealed.info.
Mm-hmm.
My Instagram is THP_the_healing_project. Okay.
Beautiful. And I'll be sure to have links to those in the show notes below as well. Are there any other ways that you like people to reach you? I saw on your website there's like a contact page where someone could email you through there.
Yes, they can. I look forward to hearing from anyone who wants to ask a question or, explore what I offer further. I also work with a team of healers, so I must say that my strength comes from my team of practitioners through our mobile clinic.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being here with me and us today. I'm really grateful for this time, and I was trying to read your earrings and now I see it says 100% blessed. Is that
yes.
What it is? Yes. 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 Those are wonderful.
Thank you.
And yeah, thank you so much again for being here with me today.
I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning in today to The Heart of the Soul. If you love the podcast, I would be so grateful if you would choose to subscribe, rate, review, or share the show. If you feel aligned with me and my energy and are feeling drawn to unearth your wild inner knowing, birth your baby wild and free, need support navigating the medical system, are feeling stuck in your grief, are curious about receiving an intuitive mediumship reading, or need a safe person to debrief and integrate a traumatic birth experience with, I am here for you. I have walked alongside women and mothers for over a decade, witnessing real healing, change, confidence, and stability be unearthed in them. I believe that women claiming their sovereignty, returning to their own inner knowing and embodying their wild will truly transform the world. To learn more, book your free clarity call at www.birthingnova.love. Until next time, remember to be brave, be loved, be wild, be you, and be the change that you seek for yourself, and also for the generations to come. Mwah.